Hello, MonsterVine.com readers and Indie Complete listeners. This is your host, Kyle Haste, and I'm here with Jamie Quartz.
Hello.
And Ian Marino. Hi. And I should probably mention that Ian Marino is of Behemoth.
Yes, I'm at the Behemoth. I'm a game developer there.
And, of course, we're here at PAX East, and we're kind of inside, literally inside the booth, like, kind of behind TV screens right now.
Yeah, we're inside the circle of Pit People single player arcade-y machine setup. It's actually it's 12-sided, so it's a dodecahedron.
This will be the coolest interview setup area we've seen that you can't see for the listeners. But Jamie and I had just played the co-op. Is primarily co-op focused game, or is it also single player for Pit People?
It's both. It's single player, and we actually had showing single player first, the circle we're inside of, and then about last year we started showing the co-op version. And couch co-op is kind of in our DNA, so it's usually part of every game we make.
Right, and if listeners are probably familiar with previous games, especially Castle Crashers, I think is the biggest one I can think of from Behemoth, but also Alien Hominid and thank you. I played at Tokyo Game Show 2009. Were you with the Behemoth in 2009?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, TGS 2009. I wasn't at that one. I was at the year after I went. We were there. We were definitely.
Only one I've seen. I forget who we met there, but I remember. But if you could give us a little intro, since I'm sure you have a little more eloquent practice take on Pit People. But Jamie and I were just playing it. It's kind of a tactics strategy game, but it's pretty fast-paced, so as you're encountering enemies, you kind of auto-attack. You don't have to select a bunch of different things, just to give you a quick brief on it, but if you can give us a more eloquent version of Pit People.
All right, well, no promises on the eloquence. It's a fast-paced, which you actually mentioned, we call it a fast-paced, turn-based co-op adventure. And it's, you go around and you spend a lot of time fighting strange people and recruiting strange people and customizing your team.
So if you're looking at the screens, you'll see a kind of a map of hexagons. Of course, it's artistically drawn as like a landscape, but it's all designed around hexagons. So you'll be in a battle against another force or another team or whoever you're encountering during the story. And you'll take turns positioning your different fighters. There's different types of fighters, people with swords and shields that are better against incoming arrows, and people with mallets who can crush people with helmets and whatnot. And then you kind of go back and forth and position people based on that. And feels pretty good. Is that a good take on it?
Yeah, definitely. And like one to add to that, when taking this kind of like the strategy turn-based genre on, we wanted to simplify the experience and make it more approachable. So as you notice, there's probably like you don't really deal with any of that minutia that you do in those types of games. And in this case, we call it a game of positioning. So it's more about where you place them and what they're gonna and then executing your orders, and they're gonna do what they're gonna do. But it doesn't mean that there's not strategy involved. So if you place somebody next to like two adjacent fighters, you don't know who they're going to attack. But if you want to isolate an enemy, then you just make sure you place them in a way where it doesn't have to make that choice. So there's deeper strategy involved, but you could really play in this, simplified way as well.
For people familiar with Behemoth, well, I guess they would already know, but people not familiar with Behemoth, there's a lot of DNA from way back in the day when you guys originally started from Newgrounds, which is a website that way before YouTube was like a pioneer of Flash videos and Flash animation. Probably got, just uncountable careers in people's animation. Like, ground.
Yeah, they may have, Tom may have invented UGC, online UGC, maybe?
UGC generated content.
Yeah. Like you said, predates YouTube, absolutely.
Yeah, by like a decade or more.
Tom Fulp, who started Newgrounds, started the Behemoth with John Baez and Dan Paladin, so he's owner, a founder in both companies, and the way it started was Alien Hominid, which you mentioned was a Flash game, and John Baez was at the time working at a video game company with Dan Paladin, and John was playing the game in at his desk, and Dan walked by and saw what he was playing. He's like, "Hey, I made that game." He's like, "What?" "I want to start a company with you guys." Yeah. And then here we are, whatever, what was that, 13, 14, 12, 14 years later or something like that.
And Dan does a lot of art, correct?
He does like all the art.
Right. Did he do some music too back in the day? I can't remember.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's a musician as well, and there's like music in, he's done music in pretty much every game. So yeah, he likes to write a lot of like, he's a drummer as well and keyboard player. So yeah, he writes when he has time, when he's not drawing, but he does all, he's the art director, co-founder at the Behemoth, does all the primary art and animation. But we also have another artist, Patrick. I gotta give him credit as well. But it's still a two-man team.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, I noticed a lot of the games, like, I mean, the aesthetic of all of them have kind of been that same overarching theme, right? Like, it's almost like the kind of same sort of universe.
Yeah.
And I know there's been a lot of crossovers in earlier ones. Is there a lot of crossover in Pibby? Like, are you gonna see characters from like Battle Block and stuff like that? Do you have like characters that kind of cross over there?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're gonna definitely see lots of cameos, as we tend to do. But we have also like cross unlocks. So if you have Castle and Battle Block, then you're gonna unlock a certain helmet, like the knight helmets, and like a Hattie helmet and stuff like that. They're not presented as like the Blue Knight is here, exact per se, but like that whole idea of it, or the look and stuff.
The reason I bring up Newgrounds is because there's some essence of there's an essence in each of your games that you don't see in other games. I don't know if it's the comedic take or the art style or just how it all meshes together, but I can feel Newgrounds that warm, happy, like rogue and unique and kind of on its own feeling that it has had since back in the day.
Yeah.
Here's through all your games, and nobody has that kind of essence in their games like you guys do.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you for saying that. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because like, I think one of the words that comes through a lot is like charming, like they find it charming. But
that,
I get what you're...
That's like lack of a better word.
Man, I think I know what you're saying. I think it is all those things, a mesh of all those things coming together and coalescing with the humor. Obviously, there's a very specific humor of Newgrounds, and we definitely have.
Slightly lighter version, because it can get very mature on Newgrounds, but you guys do a great take.
True. I know exactly what you're saying. I think it's that all our games are made, the art is originally made in Flash, and then, you know, brought into the game through all our various tools, and that's like that kind of ubiquitous thing over there, right? I mean, it's a Flash portal, right? So I see what you're saying, where that kind of look and feel, and a lot of the community helps out, like of course, like Will Stamper is from Newgrounds, and he was the voice actor and narrator in Battleblock Theater, and he's back again for this one, voice acting and actually helping out with like cinematics and stuff as well. So yeah, there's a lot of we're so like intertwined, right? So it's definitely we're gonna have that feel and vibe.
Exactly. Yeah, we definitely know Stamper from way back. I could pull a couple of quotes that I need to send.
Have you interviewed him before?
I've never talked to him, but just from all the things he's animated, his specific ones like Rebecca and I have to censor so many things.
Yeah, they're not safe for work. Yeah.
Content warning heavily.
Yeah.
But for the game itself, in terms of the story, you mentioned Stamper. He kind of introduces the world. At the beginning of the game, just to give people a lowdown of the world that they're walking into and what's happening, can you kind of introduce us to that a little bit?
Right, so the beginning kicks off with kind of this event, they'll say, in space, where this celestial space bear is killed in space. And there's actually in that... I'm going to start going off a different tangent. There's a kind of a direct connection with that in a past game, but I don't want to spoil it. So this bear in space is killed and hits the Earth, hits the planet, fractures it into Hex, because, you know, if you're making Hex-based game, you have to explain why it's Hex-based. and its blood is now literally raining down on the planet, this green blood, and has these cosmic qualities, and it's messing with time and space. So that's where you're going to see all these different characters and items and things from different points in time, and probably maybe even different universes. And so that hits, and the story opens up with a narrator kind of talking about that, and then we meet Horatio, the humble blueberry farmer, and
very defensive about his blueberries,
yeah.
Farmer.
Very defensive. And so then we meet the main primary cast. So we have Horatio, the blueberry farmer, Pipistrella, the warrior, Sophia from Spain, and Joseph, the demiclops. And the four of these characters, these heroes, all meet and band together and go and traverse this apocalyptic wonderland while all the while being berated by this narrator who clearly has it out for them. And again, without spoiling too much, it just kind of goes from there in terms of them and them helping each other out and fulfilling their, you know, individual storylines and story arcs.
Is there any specific gameplay goal you set up for this one? Like you mentioned, fast-paced strategy. I think you've succeeded. We just played a 40-minute demo, which is a nice meaty demo. Usually it's like, here's 5 minutes, have at it. And you're like, wow.
Sorry about that.
It's like, I got to write about this 2 days from now. It's going to be a little tricky, 5-minute demo. 40 minutes, it was a good chunk there.
Cool. You got a good feel for everything.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I was just kind of no question in that one so far, but for the gameplay, is there before you started building the game, was there some key components you were looking to accomplish with this one from the outset and then kind of morphed from there?
Yeah, absolutely. So it started right at the end of Battle Block Theater. We started concepting and prototyping like new ideas and stuff. And one of the concepts was Dan Paladin, I remember walking over with a sketchbook and opening it up. And it even said Pit People. Like, we went from Pit People to Game 4 back to Pit People. And it was an arena kind of area, Pit, with four or five little fighter units, all of different sizes and looks. And then, like, two buttons. It was like fight and stop or something like that.
Yeah.
So that was like the base concept of a simple game where these arena fighters just kind of go at it with very simple controls. That was like the very basic idea. When we went into the prototyping phase, that's when we started messing with are they just going to do stuff, or are we going to plan? And then tiles came into play, and then the turn-based thing was just an early prototype, which we all just fell in love with in the whole planning execution phase. So it just kind of locked in from there. But the idea is always to have a very simplified game. So that's always kind of been the main focus as we make like the strategy and the depth and the game as a whole very more complex. The core game mechanic was always supposed to be the like chaos management.
Seeing that games are getting quite complicated from the first layer a lot these days, but it doesn't necessarily, like, it seems a reverse way of doing it, how you're taking it. I like this approach because your game is still, like, challenging and complicated once you really get into it, but that first layer makes it much more able to be quick and on his feet.
Yeah, and that's the purpose of that long demo. It's like you get introduced to these very, like, I guess simple game mechanics, or not simple game mechanics, but we want to like really hammer it. It's like you don't get to tell people exactly what they get to do, but yeah, and then people, as they accept it, and then they start seeing that, oh, there's depth. If you want to delve into it, like, the depth is there for those who want to see, you know, how far the rabbit hole goes with the game. But there's also like a kid, I love it. I could watch like an 8-year-old child just like battle their way through, and like are they like really thinking about, like, you know, the hard counters, like what shields do and what helmets do in terms of this. So it's interesting, and again, it's that whole approachability of like a strategy game where people of different ages can hop in and have like a fun time.
Like, actually, a random tangent just popped in my brain. That kind of like, there's earlier games that, like, you'd say you played Blade in Your Life or Mine or yours, NES, SNES or whatever, and they kind of teach you those game mechanics in a way. And sometimes when I'm playing older or newer games these days, I'm still like, oh, I'm still pulling from Super Mario RPG or something like that. I could see your game for the 8-year-old you mentioned, kind of giving him those first taste of game mechanics. So it's a good take compared to, say, jumping into Dark Souls or something like that.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Exactly. And it's like, we don't want to drop everyone. Here you go. Here's 7 fighters and all these different items and a big world. Like, go. And don't get me wrong, there's games I love getting thrown in. Just being in, you know, immersion. Go.
Yeah.
But this one, it was definitely like, okay, here's, like we needed to kind of walk you and intertwine you, and then you know all through the lens of the story as well. Yeah. So
what was your take on the gameplay, Jamie? We were tackling it together. I kept like whispering, you're like, hey, should I put Horatio up here? Or what about the arrows?
I mean, it definitely has that vibe of that same couch co-op where it's like you're kind of interacting with each other and giving each other that like. Sort of like you're almost like I could see that one being one of those games as you're getting further into it, starting to kind of like yell at each other in a sort of friendly way of like, hey, like why are you screwing this up for me? So it's really cool that it has that. But I mean, it feels like it has that same vibe from even earlier games where I've had friends who don't really play a lot of games or aren't familiar with a lot of stuff that would still hop into something like Battle Block Theater and they would get it and you could kind of help them through it. So it does add that level of like fun frustration in a weird way. Like it's like, yeah, it's like, yeah, it gets frustrating for somebody. It's kind of like that fun side of like, hey, like it's just messing around sort of thing. So it keeps it light.
Yeah.
But I actually had a question as well about early access. So the game's out early access, right? So how has the response been? Because I know early access, especially lately, has been one of those like really hot topics of, oh, well, you're releasing this unfinished game sort of thing. What was the process of bringing that out early access and like making sure that you're not getting that kind of negative reaction or how the reaction's been so far?
Yeah, well, so reaction has been really, really good. Like if you look at user reviews and stuff like that, it's like super positive. We're so happy about it and so gracious. I mean, there's always going to be a little like any release 1.0 or this, there's always going to be some degree of negativity. Which is fine because in this arena where we're able to like engage with those people and go like, well, dude, let's talk about it, what's bugging you, and maybe like quell any of those concerns. But yeah, early at the end of somewhere around last year when we decided to do it, the game was at a point where like there's so much of the game there now. There's definitely a certain amount of polish and quality, and it was at a point where like we could release this. We just have like some more content to go through, but also a big part of it was balancing a game like this because we had never had to balance something of this size. So we really also needed like a lot more players and needed more feedback. Like it used to be playtest, coming to trade show for playtesting, trade shows. Then we kind of built a little UX playtest room, and now this, I think, early access is the next step. So we wanted to do it, and again, this is kind of like our version, our take on early access. There's so many different flavors, I feel, and so this is clearly more in a beta state of the game in terms of going into early access. And our plan was never to go for very long. We launched in January. We said no less than 3 months and no longer than 12 months will we be here. So we're kind of go in, get some good feedback, tweak some stuff, and then get out.
Yeah. That's nice. One of the as things progress for the industry in a technological point of view, like you can release games online now and circumvent publishers. That was a great innovation the last couple of years, but now you got early access. I see Sundered from Thunder Lotus Games, they went on Kickstarter for their upcoming game. They didn't need the money necessarily. They had funding and props from their last one. They just wanted to get a bunch of people dedicated to play it, and that's kind of like an early access take as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's like... like I said, we're ready to like let more people in. We had done a beta, and it went really well, and it like we kind of just wanted to get back to that. I think we saw how valuable that was, and it's like what are we gonna do, another beta?
I can only imagine like at a trade show, you got like 2-3 days of snippets of people playing, and then you got to take that memory back to the office
exactly.
And whatnot.
And then you do changes, and then you want, and then it's like, oh, that was the last trade show we're doing.
When's the next PAX?
Yeah, exactly. So this is just a good way, and again, it's fun to engage and get that feedback and see, and also just even when you ship a 1.0, it's like, oh my gosh, we didn't think this would be this thing, and then you go and you update anyways. Well, we're just doing that ahead of time, and people are really their understanding of it.
Yeah.
I think that's the cool part, is just the understanding, like, oh yeah, it's buggy, like,
yeah.
And like we've had, and again, it's like the game's like pretty like is solid in terms of it's stable
yeah.
and and stuff. It's cool. Yeah. We didn't know what to expect. We're like, wow, we're doing this, and like, how's it gonna go? And like, yeah. And we've just like been having a blast. So yeah, it's cool. I get it now.
Yeah. It's I'm thankful for the games that are kind of like, I'm sure the first couple that are doing early access to this Kickstarter approach to get people to play, maybe less forgiving because people are expecting a finished game when they pay money. But nowadays it's getting baked into the culture more or less.
Yeah, absolutely. Like games as services and supporting and supporting your community. People who
thanks Minecraft.
It's people like who helped you make your and grow your company. And I had a thought a second ago. Where'd it go?
Is it related to early access?
Yeah, it was early access related.
Playtesting.
It'll come back.
Yeah. So, what's the outlook for the game from here until release? Final question for PAX East.
We're finishing up the story content. We've been working on that in tandem with player feedback as well since January. And so we have an update 3 coming out really soon. And then expect a big story update coming after that. Or not the next one, but just after that. And then at some point, a 1.0 no later than 12 months from last January.
And where can anybody interested in the game find it currently or keep track of you guys?
Pitpeople.com, and check out all our, we brought a whole bunch of awesome new plush characters to the show as well, which are beautiful, all made by, designed by Hand of the Red.
And currently it's early access to Steam and Xbox One, or what's it on?
Yes, we're Steam early access and Xbox One game preview.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much for your time, Ian. We super appreciate it. Thank you, Jamie.
Yeah, thanks.
And please check out our preview for Pit People at MonsterVine.com, and thanks for listening. Take care.
Thank you.
This has been a MonsterVine.com interview. Like we mentioned, our full written preview of Pit People is live now on MonsterVine.com, along with more gaming coverage. Like Ian mentioned too, you can also find out more about Pit People at PitPeople.com. Back at MonsterVine, you can also find and subscribe via iTunes, Google Play, or SoundCloud to the podcast I host called Indie Complete, where we feature interviews like this, as well as each month we tackle one indie game that epitomizes the best of indie games. Our next episode is on April 10th, where we'll be diving into the newly released indie title, Night in the Woods. You can also find us on Twitter at MonsterVine and at Indie Complete.